And yet, to return to the paradox, many people, who are neither racialists nor anti-Semites, are convinced that they are able to recognize a Jew at a single glance. How is this possible if Jews are such a hybrid lot, as history and anthropology show them to be? Part of the answer, I think, was given by Ernest Renan in 1883. Il n'y a pas un type juif, il y a des types juifs. The type of Jew who can be recognized at a glance is one particular type among many others. But only a small fraction of 14 million Jews belong to that particular type, and those who appear to belong to it are by no means always Jews. One of the most prominent features, literally and metaphorically, which is said to characterize that particular type is the nose, variously described as Semitic, aquiline, hooked, or resembling the beak of an eagle. But surprisingly, among 2,836 Jews in New York City, Fishberg found that only 14%, that is, one person in seven, had a hooked nose. While 57% were straight-nosed, 20% were snub-nosed, and 6.5% had flat and broad noses. Other anthropologists came up with similar results regarding Semitic noses in Poland and the Ukraine. Moreover, among true Semites, such as purebred Bedouins, this form of nose does not seem to occur at all. On the other hand, it is, quote, very frequently met among the various Caucasian tribes, and also in Asia Minor. Among the indigenous races in this region, such as the Armenians, Georgians, Ossetes, Lezgians, Isaurs, and also the Syrians, aquiline noses are the rule. Among the people living in Mediterranean countries of Europe, as the Greeks, Italians, French, Spanish, and Portuguese, the aquiline nose is also more frequently encountered than among the Jews of Eastern Europe. The North American Indians also very often have so-called Jewish noses. End quote. Thus, the nose alone is not a very safe guide to identification. Only a minority, a particular type of Jew, seems to have a convex nose, and lots of other ethnic groups also have it. Yet intuition tells one that the anthropologist's statistics must be somehow wrong. An ingenious way out of this conundrum was suggested by Bedewy and Jacobs, who maintained that the so-called Jewish nose need not be really convex in profile, and may yet give the impression of being hooked, due to a peculiar tucking up of the wings, an infolding of the nostrils. To prove his point, that it is this nostrility which provides the illusion of beakedness, Jacobs invites his readers, quote, to write a figure six with a long tail. Now, remove the turn of the twist, and much of the Jewishness appears, and it vanishes entirely when we draw the lower continuation horizontally. End quote. Ripley, quoting Jacobs, comments, quote, behold the transformation. The Jew has turned Roman beyond a doubt. What have we proved then? That there is in reality such a phenomenon as a Jewish nose, even though it be differently constituted from our first assumption, the criterion of convexity. End quote. But is there? It could still represent an Italian or Greek or Spanish or Armenian or American Indian nose, nostrility included. That it is a Jewish and not an American Indian, Armenian, etc. nose, we deduce, at a glance, from the context of other features including expression, comportment, or dress. It is not a process of logical analysis, but rather in the nature of the psychologist gestalt perception, the grasping of a configuration as a whole. Similar considerations apply to each of the facial features considered to be typically Jewish, so-called sensuous lips, dark, wavy, or crinkly hair, melancholy, or cunning, or bulging, or slit Mongol eyes, and so forth. Taken separately, they are common property of the most varied nations. Put together, like an identikit, They combine into a prototype of, to say it once more, one particular type of Jew, of Eastern European origin, the type with which we are familiar. But our identikit would not fit the various other types of Jews, such as the Sephardim, including their very Anglicized descendants in Britain, nor the Slavonic type of Central Europe, nor the blonde Teutonic, the slit-eyed Mongoloid, or the crinkly-haired Negroid types of Jews. Nor can we be sure to recognize with certainty even this limited prototype. The collection of portraits published by Fishberg or Ripley can be used for a believe-it-or-not game if you cover the caption indicating whether the portrayed person is Jew or Gentile. The same game can be played on a cafe terrace anywhere near the shores of the Mediterranean. It will, of course, remain inconclusive because you cannot walk up to the experimental subject and inquire after his or her religion. But if you play the game in company, the amount of disagreement between the observers' verdicts will be a surprise. Suggestibility also plays a part. Did you know that Harold is Jewish? No, but now that you mention it, of course I can see it. Did you know that this or that royal family has Jewish blood? No, but now that you mention it. Hutchinson's Races of Mankind has a picture of three geishas with the caption, Japanese with Jewish physiognomy. Once you have read the caption, you feel, but of course, how could I have missed it? And when you have played this game for some time, you begin to see Jewish features, or Khazar features, everywhere.